When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." And again Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Peter turned and saw that the disciple, whom Jesus loved, was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread among the brothers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" This is the disciple who testifies these things and who wrote them down. We know that this testimony is true. Jesus did many other things as well. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that even the whole wide world would not have room for the books that would be written.
Well, I wonder if you've ever had the experience of driving along a road and only to find that the road is closed ahead. And you then take the diversion signs, but quite often they leave a lot to the imagination. They're few and far between. Have you ever had that experience? A couple of years ago, I was on a late flight into Bristol from Belfast, and the flight had been delayed. It was after midnight, and I was navigating my way through Bristol. And I came to a road close sign or a diversion sign. I followed the diversion signs, and but suddenly they disappeared. And I was driving up and down some of the back streets of Bristol, desperately trying to find a sign for the motorway. I put on my sat nav, but it kept bringing me back to the road close sign. And I wondered if I should ask someone. I saw one or two guys coming out of a kebab shop, but I thought, no, an Irish man asking directions in the early hours of the morning in Bristol, not a good idea. And to add to that, my car was almost out of fuel. What was I to do? I had lost my way. As I was thinking what to share with you this morning, perhaps I'm speaking to someone this morning, and perhaps you feel you have lost your way as a Christian. As Grant was reminding us earlier, perhaps you feel you've messed up and can't find a way back. It feels a bit like my experience with the sat nav. You keep ending back at the road closed sign. And perhaps you feel that no one else has ever been where you are right now. You have lost your way. I want us this morning to look together at this incident in Peter's life, which Krista read for us just a moment ago, where Peter is recommissioned to serve Jesus. And I want us to remind ourselves that failure is not final. Failure is not final. And let me take you back to that sad and fateful night when Peter denied or disowned Jesus. Perhaps we could have the words up on the screen eventually. But let's follow it in the Bible in the meantime. Matthew chapter 26 and verse 69. Matthew 26 and 69. Jesus had already been arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, about to be tried, and Matthew 26, taking it up there at verse 69, we read, "Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. 'You also were with Jesus of Galilee,' she said. But he denied it before them all. 'I don't know what you're talking about,' he said. Then he went out to the gateway where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, 'This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth.' He denied it again with an oath, 'I don't know the man.' After a little while, those standing there went to Peter and said, 'Surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away.' Then he began to call down curses and he swore to them, 'I don't know the man.' Immediately a cock crowed. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken, 'Before the cock crows, you will disown me three times.' And he went outside and wept bitterly." Peter was a strong character. He was a burly fisherman, but he was a broken man. The immediate days following the crucifixion must have been the darkest in Peter's life. His master had died and had been buried. And on the night Peter had denied Jesus, they had exchanged a look, but they had not spoken together. If you turn quickly to Luke's Gospel and 22, verse 61. Luke 22 and 61. We read there, "The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him. 'Before the cock crows today, you will disown me three times.' And he went outside and wept bitterly." Can you imagine how Peter must have felt? He had no opportunity to tell Jesus how sorry he was or to ask for forgiveness. Now it was too late. The memory of sin would have filled him with grief and haunting regret. Even the news of the resurrection, wonderful as it was, might not have been enough to comfort him. He had seriously messed up. However, Peter's story doesn't end in failure. Knowing exactly how Peter felt, Jesus sent a special message of reassurance, which is only recorded for us by Mark. In Mark 16, verse 7, the angels there said to the woman at the tomb, "But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." In that general promise were two words that Peter would never forget. "Go tell the disciples and Peter." He alone is mentioned by name. He alone is singled out for special reassurance. The relationship had not ended. Jesus was going to meet with them again. And we know that this happened because Luke tells us that the two disciples, after talking with Jesus on the Emmaus Road, returned to Jerusalem, and they said there in Luke 24, "It is true, the Lord has risen and appeared to Simon." If you could turn quickly to 1 Corinthians 15, 1 Corinthians 15, verse 3, read also that Paul also tells us that Jesus appeared to Peter. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 3, read, "For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins, according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day, according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Peter, and then to the 12. And so you see, Peter had already been restored privately. And now in these verses that we're about to look at this morning, we see Peter being restored publicly. Peter had denied the Lord publicly, so it was important that there be public restoration and a recommission before the other disciples. And before we judge Peter too harshly, I'm sure that we are all guilty of denying, disowning our Lord in various ways. He gives us opportunities, doesn't he, to speak for him. And sometimes we fail to grasp them as we should. And we're conscious of our failings. But coming back to the verses that we're looking together at this morning, just to set the background, in those opening verses of John 21, the disciples had been out fishing, and they'd been fishing all night, but they had caught nothing. And then early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore. And what a difference it made when Jesus came on the scene. And Jesus called out to them, "Haven't you any fish?" And they replied, "No." At first, they didn't recognize. Of course, it was Jesus. And Jesus said there in verse 6, "Throw your nets on the right side of the boat and you will find some." And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. And John cried out, "It's the Lord." And Peter wrapped his outer garment around him and jumped into the water. It's interesting to see the difference in the temperaments of the disciples, isn't it? John said, recognized it was the Lord. He recorded that it was 153 fish. But Peter was the impulsive one. When he heard it was Jesus, put on his outer garment and jumped into the water. And Jesus then, he had cooked them breakfast and he invited them to come for a men's breakfast. Some of us feel that a man's breakfast is sort of a more recent thing, but we find one recorded for us here in John 21. And notice how tenderly and how graciously Jesus deals with Peter. First of all, he feeds him, and then he ministers to him. You remember it was at a fire of coals in the courtyard that Peter had denied Jesus. But now at another fire, Peter is restored to usefulness again. And so here on the seashore, after breakfast, or on the shore there, after breakfast, Jesus asks Peter the question, "Do you love me? Do you love me?" Let's read it again, verse 15. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." It was a very personal question, wasn't it? Notice in verse 15, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John." Jesus uses Peter's old name before he was called by Jesus. He says, Simon, son of John, three times. Simon, son of John. If you could turn to John chapter 1. If you could turn back just a moment. John chapter 1, verse 42. See there of how Peter was called. John 1, 42, it says, and he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, you are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas, which when translated is Peter. But here as Jesus was ministering to Peter, there on the shore, he takes him, as it were, down memory lane. He takes him right back to the day when he had called him and said to him, Simon, son of John. He uses his old name. He reminds him, in a sense, what he was before he was called by Jesus. Sometimes God has to do that in our lives, hasn't he? He needs to sometimes remind us of who and what we were before he saved us. Some feel perhaps that Jesus was actually saying, Peter, the way you acted, the way that you disowned me and denied me, you were like the old Simon. You weren't being a Peter. You were like the old Simon before I called you to follow me. Simon, son of John. Simon, son of John. Simon, son of John. Do you truly love me more than these? There's often been great discussion in relation to what did Jesus mean when he said more than these. What was Jesus referring to? Was he asking, do you love me more than you love these other men? That's unlikely, because this had not been an issue among the men. They all loved Jesus. Or when Jesus said, do you love me more than these, was he referring to the net and the fish? The nets would have been spread out there on the shore drying. The 153 fish were there, apart from what they had eaten. Was Jesus referring to the fish? Not likely, because there's no evidence that Peter was going to return to fishing permanently. But it's actually likely to mean, do you love me more than these other men love me? You see, Peter had boasted of his love for Jesus, hadn't he? And he had even contrasted it with the love of the other disciples. Again, let's look quickly at Luke 22, verse 31. Luke 22, verse 31. And Jesus warned Peter there. And Luke 22 and 31, he said, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. But he replied, Lord, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death. Jesus answered, I tell you, Peter, before the cock crows today, you will deny me three times that you know me. And then Matthew tells us, Peter said, even if all fall away on account of you, even if everyone denies you, I never will. Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. You see what Jesus is doing here? Jesus gently rebukes him. Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Some of the older commentators make much of the fact that in this conversation, two different words are used for love. In verse 15 and 16, Jesus used the word agape, which means sacrificial love. And Peter, on the other hand, uses philia, which is the love of a friend or to have affection for someone. And then in verse 17, Jesus uses philia also the third time. However, we shouldn't read too much into this, as both words are used interchangeably throughout John's gospel. But it certainly was a personal question, wasn't it? Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these. Not only was it personal, but it was a painful question. Verse 17, Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" You see, when Jesus asks us a question, it's never to give himself information, but to give us information. And Jesus knew exactly what was going on in Peter's life. And like a skilled surgeon, Jesus was getting right to the very heart of the problem. Someone has rightly said that Satan sifted Peter to destroy him, but Jesus was sifting him to restore him. Satan sifted Peter to destroy him, but Jesus was sifting him to restore him. And the question is asked three times to remind Peter that he had disowned or denied Jesus three times. And each question makes him relive the bitterness of his betrayal. And Peter had to confess publicly three times, "Lord, I love you. Lord, I love you. You know all things. You know that I love you." Shortly after we started attending Emmanuel, Spencer helpfully took us through the book of Revelation on Sunday mornings, and we looked together at the seven churches initially. And one of them was the church at Ephesus. And I'd just like to read a couple of verses from Revelation. If we could turn perhaps to Revelation chapter 2 and verse 2. Revelation 2, verse 2. And Jesus there was commending the church at Ephesus. First of all, and he said, "I know your deeds, your hard work, and your perseverance. I know that you cannot tolerate wicked men, that you have tested those who claim to be apostles but are not, and have found them false. You have persevered and have endured hardships for my name and have not grown weary." And then Jesus said this, "Yet I hold this against you. You have forsaken your first love." Notice Jesus commended them for lots of things. He commended them for their hard work, their perseverance, their faithfulness, their discernment, their suffering. But he said, "You have left your first love." I wonder, what about you and me today? Do we love Jesus? If the answer is yes, then there will be consequences in the way we live, in the choices we make, in the things we talk about. And sometimes the Lord brings us back, doesn't he, to this question. To get us refocused, "Do you really love me?" Even as I was preparing this message, I found it challenging my own heart. Sometimes we can be so busy in ministry and so busy doing things and sometimes getting weary in it all. And we need to remind ourselves, why am I doing this? Am I doing it out of love for Jesus? Do you love me? You see, Jesus recognized that if this area of Peter's life was addressed, then everything else would naturally work out. Everything else would flow from his love for Jesus. And Peter, notice Peter's reply. He said, "Lord, you know that I love you. You know that I love you. You know all things. You know that I love you." Peter is now a humbler man. He realizes his love for Jesus is no greater than that of the other disciples. Like us, he does not love as pure and unselfishly as he should, but he does love Jesus. And when driven almost to desperation, he can do nothing but cast himself on the Lord's perfect knowledge of his heart. And he says, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Then notice what Jesus says in And each time in his reply to Peter, he said, "Feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep. If you love me, then serve me." Peter may have felt that he had blown it. He may have felt that he was finished. But God's plan and purpose for Peter was not knocked off course in any way. Let me remind you again of the verses that we referred to earlier. You don't need to look them up. In Luke 22 and 31, Jesus said, "Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail." And listen to this. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. When you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. You see, Jesus now points Peter towards the future. This was a new chapter, a new era, full of opportunities to serve. Jesus said, "Peter, now I want you to feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. I want you to get on with the task that I'd planned for you. I want you to care for my sheep. I want you to feed the lambs, the new converts, those who still hadn't grown to maturity. I want you to feed the sheep, tend the sheep, the mature believers. They would all need protected and cared for. Feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep." We see here a dual role of the pastor, don't we, of the shepherd. They'd need fed, but they would also need protected. And Peter needed to do both as shepherd of God's flock. By nature, lambs and sheep are defenseless, prone to wander. They need the care and protection and guidance of a shepherd, as well as being fed and led to fresh pastures. It's interesting there in verse 17, the Greek word for sheep, it means "my dear sheep." My dear sheep. And the Lord's sheep are dear to him. And Peter was given the awesome privilege of caring for them. Don't we see a lovely picture of the Lord's grace here? Think for a moment. If you and I were involved in getting Peter restored and involved in ministry again and helping him to get back on track, what would we have done? I'm not sure if we would have got him involved in public ministry. I can imagine an elders' meeting. And I would probably say, "Well, let's give him a job out of sight for a while. You know, keep him in the background to see how he does." But you know, Jesus dealt with him with grace. What is grace? God giving us what we don't deserve. Yes, Peter had messed up. Peter had disowned Jesus. But God's plan for him wasn't knocked off course. And Jesus said to Peter, "Peter, I want you to get on with the job now. I want you to feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep." Jesus had a task for Peter to accomplish for his kingdom. He had given him specific tasks, gifts, and all the time he was molding him and shaping him in order to see it fulfilled. And in the broader sense this morning, each of us have been entrusted with gifts from the Lord that we should use. He has given to us, he has entrusted them to us to use for his kingdom. I'm conscious this week that many of you are using your gifts at Holiday Bible Club, and that's wonderful to reach boys and girls with the gospel. And each one of us can be involved in praying and supporting this work this week. But perhaps you're here this morning and God has given you gifts and you're not using them. He has given you abilities. And perhaps you feel, "Well, I'm just too much of a lousy Christian to be used by Jesus." Peter disowned Jesus. And yet the Lord was giving him another chance. He was in control of his life. He showed him his weaknesses. He showed him his need. And he said, "Peter, now feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep." So the Lord said to Peter, "Do you love me? Then serve me. And then follow me. And follow me." Notice verse 18. Jesus said, "I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Jesus had just spoken to Peter about his life, about the shape of his ministry. But he now tells him that there's going to be a cost involved. He's going to have to suffer. And actually, Peter, it's going to mean death. It means that you're going to die if you're going to serve me, if you're going to follow me. There's a cost involved. It will mean suffering. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you're old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. You may be aware that according to Christian tradition and church historians, Peter was crucified in Rome under Emperor Nero Augustus Caesar. And we're told that he asked to be crucified upside down because he felt he was not worthy to die exactly as his master had died. See, Peter was going to know something of what Paul described when he wrote to the church at Philippi. You remember Paul said, well, let's turn quickly to it. One more reference. Philippians 3, verse 10. Philippians 3, verse 10. Paul writing there, he said, "I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow to attain to the resurrection from the dead." Paul said, I want to know Christ. I want to know the power of his resurrection, but I want to know the fellowship of his sufferings. The fellowship of his sufferings. Many, many over the centuries have known what it has meant to suffer for Jesus and share in the fellowship of his sufferings. As I was preparing this message, I was thinking of a missionary couple that Rosalind and I worked with in Ivory Coast. They'd been evacuated from Liberia back in the mid-90s. They lost everything. They lost their friends, their home, their ministry, their possessions. They had to flee for their lives, and they were evacuated into Ivory Coast. They arrived in Ivory Coast, that's when we got to know them, and they began to minister to Liberian refugees. They set up a new home, but one night that all changed. Armed robbers came to their home. Their guard was critically wounded. Their neighbor came to the rescue and he was killed. The husband and children were threatened. And everything of value was taken, and the wife, Janet, was abused in the worst way imaginable. They came back to the UK, and Janet wrote these words later. She said, "I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection. He wants me to understand the fellowship of his sufferings. The two go together. And is in seeing the two as working together, not in conflict, that there is blessing, that there is blessing." And as Jesus here was preparing Peter for the future, he said, "Peter, yes, please, I want you to serve me and follow me, but you're going to suffer. It's going to mean going to the cross. There's a cost involved in following Jesus." And so it is today. If we're determined to serve Jesus, there's a cost involved, isn't there? Jesus said, "If anyone comes after me, let him take up his cross. Let him deny himself. Take up his cross and follow me." Back here to verse 19, Jesus said this to, to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." Peter was going to die, but Jesus reminds him here that his death would glorify God. Peter, there's no need to be discouraged. There's no need to be cast down. Jesus told him by the reason by which Peter would glorify God. What a difference it would make if we kept this perspective in life. If we belong to Jesus, our death will glorify God. And then he said to Peter, "Now, Peter, follow me. Follow me." A more accurate translation is actually more than just "follow me," but "accompany me" or "come with me." Come with me. It's a lovely thought, isn't it, to think that Jesus, he invites us not just to follow him, but to actually to accompany him, to go with him. I mentioned one of my traveling sagas earlier, but sometimes when I travel with my work, it can be stressful. I remember going out to visit a couple a few years ago. I got a taxi from the airport. The missionaries had booked me into a hotel. I arrived there at 5 o'clock in the morning, what was a sort of a war zone. The hotel was closed in the dark, and it was a really stressful time. But there are others who take pity on me and meet me at the airport. And I was out visiting someone very recently, and they were waiting there, smiling, waiting to welcome me at the airport. And I had nothing to do but get in his car and accompany him to his home. It was stress-free. And Jesus was telling Peter something of the suffering he was going to know. But he said, "Peter, just follow me, accompany me. We're going together." Amazing, isn't it? Right through life, Jesus will accompany us. He will never leave us. He will hold us through those difficult times, through those dark times, through those times when we feel the bottom has fallen out of our world and we feel overwhelmed with difficulties and problems. Jesus is there. He's accompanying us. He's holding us. He will never, ever let us go. And Jesus said to Peter, "Peter, just follow me. Accompany me." And then, of course, I love this part because even though the Lord had met with Peter and he was now a humbler man, he was still Peter, wasn't he? Verse 20, Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved was following. This is the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and said, "Lord, who is he who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" You see, Peter turned and saw that John was following. He said, "But Lord, what about him? What about John? You've just told me what will happen to me now, but what about John?" Here was Peter restored and commissioned, but still Peter, still curious. It's easy to get our eyes off Jesus, isn't it, and onto others and get distracted. And Jesus rebukes Peter pretty straight here, and he said, he pretty directly, verse 22, Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? Peter, that's got nothing to do with you. You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread among the believers that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?" Peter, what John does or how he dies has got nothing to do with you. You just follow me. Perhaps I'm speaking to someone this morning and you have become distracted or disillusioned by looking at others. Perhaps you have got hurt in the past. And others have got in the way. And perhaps the Lord would say to you this morning, "What is that to you? You follow me." See, our primary concern should always be our own walk with God, our own obedience, seeking to keep our eyes focused on Jesus. As we close this morning, I'm glad that failure is not final. Jesus reached out to Peter in his hour of need, the amazing grace of God. Peter's restoration to usefulness was entirely the Lord's doing. It was Jesus who met him. It was Jesus who examined him and enabled him to make a fresh start. Peter may have despaired of ever being used again or ever being allowed to serve his master, but he proved that there is no pit too deep for God's grace to reach. Coming back to my experience in Bristol, my first step to finding my way home was recognizing that I was lost. And perhaps you're here this morning and it's possible even as you listen to what we have shared today, perhaps you're not a Christian. Perhaps you have never had a relationship with Jesus. Well, the good news is this morning you can come and trust him. Perhaps you are a Christian, but somehow you have lost your way. You know, when we acknowledge our need, Jesus is always seeking to find us and restore us to usefulness again. Because failure is not final. And what better time is there to come back to God this morning as we reflect around the Lord's table on what Jesus has accomplished on the cross. We're going to sing shortly these words. It says, "What grace is mine that he who dwells in endless light called through the night to find my distant soul and from his scars poured mercy that would plead for me that I might live and in his name be known. So I will go wherever he is calling me. I lose my life to find my life in him. I give my all to gain the hope that never dies. I bow my heart, take up my cross, and follow him. Do you love me? Then serve me and follow me." Let's pray together. I just want to read Peter's words. Peter wrote in his first epistle, as a much older man, 1 Peter 5, Peter said this, "Humble yourselves therefore under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. Be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that your brothers throughout the world are undergoing the same kind of sufferings. And listen to this. And the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. To him be the glory forever and ever. Amen."